Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, Bedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702. Or if you want to, you can join me on the Twitch network. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And I will be monitoring the chat room there as I am streaming to there too. I do a co-broadcast for those of you in the know. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. And, of course, I have my personal account, which is Paul Franz, P-A-U-F-R-N-Z. And just a reminder, I'm proud of being Catholic, a tech geek, and also an Orioles fan. So if you don't like any of those or have qualms with one of those, don't follow me. But, of course, I also have my tertiary account, which is my business account, which is for Franz Games, for all the updates and news when it comes to those three things. If I come online, SFB Online, and Starfleet Warlord, you will see all announcements through that account. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. They've been busy working on Capsulog number 54, so we can get that out the door ASAP. I'm pretty sure we should be seeing it in like 2 weeks. Of course, that's going to be it's going to take a little longer than 2 weeks to get to you, but it should be available on the online store in probably the next 2 weeks. So keep an eye out for the Capsulog number 54. Some quick reminders when it comes to ADB. They do have lots of free stuff on their website. Just go to starfleetgames.com. I would go to like to the Master Index, or and you'll see many things. Or you want to go to federationcommander.com. You'll see a wonderful website there, which is also related to Starfleet Games, and that has everything about Federation Commander, including a link to the Federation Commander BBS. Moving on and forward to the SFB Online Tournament, Sapphire Star Tournament number 6. Currently, we only have 13 players for it, so there's 3 slots still available. If I don't see anyone else signing up, or if there's still a slot available by Monday, I'm going to take a slot. So, because I try to make it so it's available to as many people as possible, but you know, hey, if no one else is going to sign up, I'm in. Just a reminder, we have 2 updated official tournament ships. That's the Federation tournament ship, which now is of G-Rack, so you can have 4 ad-racks and 2 type 1s. And I forget what the alternate selection is off the top of my head. But also the Andromeda now has 2 TRHs, so you know it actually has a fighting chance in my mind now. And of course, the Vudar ship that's been in playtesting for a while is now an official ship. So if you want to play the Vudar, hey, come on, join us. Moving on to the SFB Online library report. When it comes to the FedCom library, there's still no progress. There's still some more I have to send out to people, and I apologize for not sending them out because I know there are people that are just itching for X ships, in which case currently it's stuck at 377. For squadron-sized ships, and the fleet-sized ships are stuck at 278. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's Smitty, that's the one thing all Paul friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we've got me. Russ is not here. Barry's late. But we shall continue on. So tonight, actually, I had planned on first getting Barry's views on the Vudar, the Vudar Tournament Cruiser, which I guess it will just have to be delayed until he actually is able to show up, which is fine. We can actually put that off until another point in time. So, obviously, we have Capsule number 54 coming up. That will be a nice new addition, new fiction, some updates on some updates, from the different parts of the SFU universe, whether it is ACTA SF or it is Starmada, or some new ships for FedCom, because I think we mentioned those on the podcast around 3 weeks ago when we got sidetracked by actually it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, we got sidetracked by Gary, which is fine. I think it was a good discussion about Cabs Long 254 and some of the history of obviously the Starfleet universe itself, and my opinions on some of those things. Of course, if you weren't interested in the history of Starfleet universe and more interested in tactics and ships and things like that, which is, and we will be doing that, I know some of you out there want just to see games, that's all you want to see, and you don't want to actually that's mainly the people in the YouTube channel. They say, this should be just for promoting, Starfleet Battles. At least that's the way I'm reading it. Guys, if I'm reading that wrong, please tell me, because that's the way I read it. I read it as you want basically just to see live action SFB. You want me to record it and comment on it and basically have it like every other board game event. Which, to be honest, as I've talked about this before, but I'm gonna bring it back anyway, which is yeah, Russ, you're actually here, and actually, let me do this something for you, which is I'm not sure if how you're listening.
Recording started.
And please ignore that. I forgot to do that part for those people on the talk show. So people on talk show can now hear me. Obviously, Russ is one of those. That's really weird. But anyway, didn't see it participates, and I know Russ is in the channel. I should have seen him. I'm assuming Russ is currently listening on the Twitch, which is fine. If he wants to actually see my lovely face and hopefully not throw up, he can see it there. But that's great and all, but I know you guys have seen me do basically game reviews, mainly my own games, in the past, games that I've recorded. And then what I do is I crank that sucker to be four times the normal speed. Because of normally, turns take a while to play. They're not, I think, the non-SFB person, they're not really, really exciting. Even for me, sometimes they're not really exciting because most of it requires patience and just on a player's side, We're thinking through the situation, thinking through what can we do, what are we gonna do, and you know, I hoped, you know, with the analysis that I had for the different games that I have broadcast, that those games have been of interest to people, that people have enjoyed at least me commenting on my own games, maybe getting a little behind the scenes kind of thing, so that you can actually understand what's going on in my own mind. You know, maybe that's not such a good thing, because then my opponents will know some of my tactics, some of my thoughts, which always, you know, learn as I think is it. I forget which is the famous book of the Art of War. I'm sure Barry, who just joined us, will be happy to be able to tell us. But let me just finish this thought, and then I'll say hello to Barry. So Barry, just hold on. And that is that. Those take, you know, to do it live is kind of slow. Now, the one thing that we'd have to figure out is a way of speeding up play. In theory, we can speed up play, but of course, we have to also have the people that are going to be playing it to agree. You know, whether it's, we've talked about it before, which is some of the things that you can do is, you know, put time clocks on everything so that people are forced to think, to limit their choices is another way of thinking about it. There's a couple of other possibilities that I've not tried, and I would really like to try, you know, which is changing the way SFB is played. In that, with SFB, you have it so that you do, for like 8 impulses, you do pre-plotting. Like I've talked about before, for like FedCom, where in theory, you could actually have a play by email if you got rid of the idea of a break. You just always, for each segment, you announce secretly what you're doing, you know, and then continue on. So there's no breaks. You when it comes to the sub pulses, all four of those sub pulses for each impulse, you just move. You plot that whole four sub pulses, you know, for whatever you're going to be doing, you know, things like that, which I would love to experiment with the idea of pre-plotted movement for people and see if that by its nature would actually speed up the running of the game. I'm not sure, but I think in some cases it would. Other cases, I'm not so sure, because it depends upon the person. Because I'm sure you've seen some of my games where the delays are not caused by me, but they're caused by my opponent and them actually reacting to what I'm doing. And in that case, it's not just actions. Most of the time, it is movement, which is why I was thinking that having sort of pre-plotted movement of 8 impulses might actually help the situation in that case. But with that, we'll table that discussion for later, and I will introduce Barry Kirk. How are you doing, Barry?
Excellent. How are you doing?
Doing good. You get here late, and you have to leave early. What the heck, man?
I know. Well, the only thing I have planned for tomorrow is to drive to York.
Mm-hmm. But you got to get up bright and early in the morning is the issue.
Well, I have to, if I don't get up bright and early, it's a 10-hour drive, so.
Understood. Hey, Barry, I'm not fuzzing. I'm just saying it's like the podcast started 10 minutes ago.
I know. I had my timer, my alarm set for mountain time.
Oh, okay. That'll definitely change things a bit.
I've just been bouncing around from time zone to time zone to time zone.
Understood.
So I spent 10 days in Salt Lake City, and my daughter flew out there to meet me, and then we I think I had one talk show. I think I was in Idaho
You were in
Falls.
You were in the car last week with your daughter driving.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we were driving from Salt Lake to Idaho Falls. That was it.
Right, and then you left early because of that, which is fine. I'm not fussing for that. But
yeah, and then we
continue.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we continued from there into Wyoming and from there into Montana, and we drove west to her new house, which is on the Pacific coast. And then I spent a day there, and then I flew back to Cincinnati a few days ago. And then I'm headed back, I'm driving to York tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then Tuesday, I'm flying out to California.
A lot of travel. Please stay safe, my friend, with all that traveling.
Thank you. But I do think we could get a game of brass in over the weekend.
Possible? I have to check. Depends on what day you're thinking of.
My flight is Tuesday.
Yeah, I got an appointment on Monday at 1 o'clock.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'll bring brass out. What the heck?
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You still have that one piece that I
yes, I do. It's sitting right here. And for those watching the video, it's right here.
Yeah.
Smush. Now, to complete our discussion from last time
about
tournament cruisers, there's one that we never got to, and which is something which, since you're not in the know, and you really haven't been paying attention to the SMB community that much, that is currently now we have an official Vudar ship.
Interesting.
Basically, it looks like they took the original Vudar ship, you know, that they did has a playtest ship many years ago. I didn't find out about this until I looked at it, and they made it now official. This was last revised 14 years ago, according to the image I've got from Patrick. And what I did was originally, actually, we had as part of the library, we had a third gen definition of it. And I decided that, you know, if everything else is second gen when it comes to tournament, let's make the Vudar tournament. And I don't think Steve Cole would have a problem with that, especially since the Vudar, in theory, should be available for free download from the website. So it's not like anyone's going to be stealing.
Correct. Correct. It's public domain.
Well, not public domain.
At least he's put it in.
But
he put it in the public.
No, he did not put it in public domain, but he made it freely available for you to download for your use.
Correct.
If
I remember correctly, the Vudar had ion cannons.
Yes, it does. It had 4 ion cannons.
And they were two-turn arming weapons?
Yes, they are. And given the two-turn...
impulse power.
It requires at least 1 point...
So they used...
Right. For standard ion cannons, you have to have at least 1 point of impulse power. Actually, not doesn't necessarily have to be impulse. It could be APR.
It was the ion power.
Right, ion power, which is impulse or APR.
Yeah. Anything other than warp.
Right.
Although I think you can use some warp to create ion power. There is a procedure, but it's not... I think you have to spend like a point to convert other warp power to ion power or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I have to check that. Jeez.
I'm just going by memory.
Oh, understood.
Yeah. And didn't the Vudar have phaser ones, twos, and threes?
When it comes to what? Say again?
What phaser ones, twos, and threes, I think it
Yes, it
was.
does. Yes, it does. And while we're at it,
And
let's hold on for a moment, Barry. I want to introduce Gary. How you doing, Gary?
hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. Hey,
Okay.
Gary.
Hey.
What the heck, man?
Well, actually, I wasn't sure how
Everyone's
long.
late today. Jeez. I'm the only person that was on time. Everyone's like freaking late. Jeez. What are you guys doing to me?
Well, actually, I didn't want to hijack your discussion, but there were a couple of things I wanted to mention, so I can remain zipped and wait until you guys are finished talking about the Vudar.
Okay. So,
I forget about the ion cannon. Was it like somewhere between a disruptor and a photon? Was it one of those?
yeah, it's closer to a. That's. Oh, duh. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm looking at. I'm confusing the hit with the damage. Yeah, the standard damage for a ion cannon is 6 points of damage. That's 2 points of energy for 2 turns. So
Okay,
it's.
so in that sense, it's 50% more damage than the energy you put in.
Right.
Put in four, get six out, which is half, which is not quite as efficient as a photon.
Well, agreed. Agreed. But also, it does have
But
something which is not doesn't really make that really isn't. No one is going to use it in tournament play, which is they have a proxy function, so that you can fire, a proximity mode.
right.
But also, the
But
overloads.
is it more accurate than a photon?
Yeah, oh, a heck of a lot more accurate than a photon, and pretty much more accurate. Is it more, it's not more accurate than a disruptor with UIM, but it's more accurate than a disruptor without UIM.
Okay, so it's got seriously good accuracy.
Yep.
It can accumulate damage over turns. It has an overload, what, up to 12?
Yep.
Requiring 8 points of power.
Yeah, let me double check on that one and few bookmarks and oops, wrong one. This is not the there's that one and there it is. Okay, I know I put some bookmarks and I was pretty sure it was. I thought it might be 2 and 4. I have to double check. That's what I'm looking. Okay, okay. Oh, where's overloads? Arming. 2 points of power. To overload energy, 2 points of power, one of which must be from an ion source, must be allocated above the normal arming. So a total of 6 points of energy. So cost total 6 points of energy to overload it.
So 12 total.
Right.
Wait, sorry. For
So, so,
standard, it's 2 and 2.
right.
And for overload, it's what?
2 and 4 or 3 and 3?
Okay. And the overload does double damage? Okay, so it's more efficient power-wise when you overload it.
Right. Versus, yeah. And
So.
the one thing you should know is that it uses 2d6.
So less affected by electronic warfare, not that you have much in tournament. So, for 6 points of power, you do 12 points of damage. So it is as efficient as a photon. But then much more accurate, but less total damage.
Yep.
Okay. That's a nice that actually works out pretty well. That is starting to remind me of the Culligar antimatter cannon in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one other tertiary system.
Yep.
And I forget what that had a lot to do with affecting the how did that work again? It was the
ion pulse generator.
Yes.
And in tournament play, you cannot use it in jamming mode, but you can use it in pulse mode, the defensive mode.
Right.
So it's called defensive ionic defensive wave mode.
Now, that affected drones, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Out to range 2. The amount of damage is equal to the amount of power you put into the generator, which can be up to a total amount of 4 points of energy into the pulse generator.
So it could do up to 4 points of damage to every drone within 2 hexes.
Yeah, every size class 6 or 7 unit other than plasma.
Right.
So fighters, shuttles, and drones.
Oh, nice. And it just generates a pulse. Is there a capacitor or?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't remember that. Give me a sec here. Because I did. During allocation, orders or power. Capacitor. Yeah, it does. Each IPG has a capacitor. The capacitor for a given IPG cannot be transferred to a different IPG. Big surprise. And since we're starting web size 3, it starts with 4 points of energy in the IPG.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically it's a really good anti-drone weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if there's a scatter pack coming in, it can basically say, take it out.
Yep.
And then use 1P3 to take out any remaining large drones.
Mm-hmm. Which it has one left side, one right side, phaser threes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the two rear phaser twos, which are left rear... rear arc and right rear arc. Sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Plus so right arc plus rear arc and on so forth.
Right. But basically use the pulse generator and then arrange 2 and then anything that survives that you fire 1P3 at and it's gone.
Exactly.
Well, any drone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any drone. Obviously.
Any drone.
Yeah. Well, actually even a shuttle.
Even a shuttle.
Yeah, shuttle, because shuttle takes 6 points of damage. Now,
right.
Fighter's a little different, though.
How many pulse generators does the ship have?
One.
One.
Only okay. One.
Which is more, and how often can it be fired?
Ooh, I got to double check, but I'm pretty sure it's just once per turn. I don't think there's a delay. Okay, capacitors and defensive mode. Okay, pump. yeah, whatever. Right, pump. Whoa. Okay, excuse me. I have to read this a little more because there's one thing it does not explicitly state, which is how many times it can fire per turn. Because here's what it says. Defensive ionic wave mode energy release from IPGs is announced during seeking weapon stage and resolved in direct fire stage after the first hellbore firing step. This can be done only once per impulse. He just does not confer the ability to release more than one wave per impulse.
Is there a power limit per turn?
That's the one thing I do not know, because that's the one thing that I don't. I was looking for, and I can't see, which is how many times an IPG can be used per turn. Okay, I want two modes. I burst the bum bum bum. Cannot simultaneously operate in both modes in the same impulse, but can switch between two modes impulse by impulse. Subject to the limits of the power in its capacity. Okay. I was looking at the jam. You have to cancel the jamming mode, if you want to do a ionic wave.
Right.
But from the looks of it, you can do it once per impulse. It seems to indicate that you can do it as often as you want, and there's no limitation on it. So
So you could use the capacitor, recharge from batteries, and use it again.
Yep.
In the same turn.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, of course, here's the one thing you have to be careful about. It says energy from IPGs must be impulse, APR, or ionized, which I think that's what you were referring to earlier.
Yes.
And can be accumulated over a number of turns during a scenario. Right.
Yeah, but I think how much warp power do you need to burn to ionize the rest of your warp power?
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, can you do what you do with like reserve warp power to have reserve if you can have reserve impulse power,
you can.
That means you can.
Correct.
You could actually, if you planned for it and decided not to use reserve warp power, you could use reserve impulse power.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you could, in theory, you can. I would think that would give you reserve. Okay. Anyway, because it's not. It can be ionized. AWRs, regardless of the size of the ship, the number of ions it wants to arm, or the amount of energy convert. Don't mind me. Right. I'm trying to find how they do it. Okay. Right. Designs can be from any source, regardless of the size of the ship. It wants to arm the ship, pays its ionization costs or limited to it. And then they have an example here. Whereas, it's 4 points of impulse power, 2 points of APR. This is arm, 3 ion kind of 1 IPG. This captain has no trouble raising the ship for combat. Allocating 4 points of impulse to complete and 2 points of APR. Right. You can defer providing the point of energy to the 3rd ion kind of the following turn. Okay. Okay, so it looks like, that's crazy. And that the rules don't state itself, but it's shown in the example. To fully recharge the RPG with 4 points, each of the ion kinds required, the captor decides that he will ionize power from his warp engines. To do this, the ship pays an additional 0.5 points of energy, the energy ionization cost of the DW is a half point of power. By paying this half point of power, the DW can consider any given power provided by the whip engines or drawn from power from its SIPS battery as ionized power. So.
Yeah, it's right.
Right. So in theory, you can have. You don't even have to have reserve impulse. You can
impulse or APR.
You can just have. If you want to, you can just pay the ionization cost. Now the question is, what's the ionization cost for a cruiser? I'm just looking to see if it's mentioned here on the thing. Yep, it's one.
So for 1 point of power, you can turn all the warp power in the cruiser into ion power.
Yep. Basically.
Well, that's not a big penalty. I mean, it's a penalty, but not a big one.
Yeah, but I'm glad it has that ability.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise it would... I'm pretty sure they might have added that after it kind of became obvious that if you all your impulse engines were gone, you no longer had ionization. You couldn't fire your weapons anymore. You know, it's kind of pointless. So,
yeah, it made hit and run raids on your impulse and APR is really attractive. And of course, you can run out of power for your weapons real quick, even with an undamaged ship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it has six phaser ones, so it's not too bad when it comes to phasers.
Six phaser ones, two phaser twos, and two phaser threes, right?
Mm-hmm. Four ion cannons and that's one actually, IPG.
Yeah, it's actually a little phaser light then.
Oh, yeah. But it's not awful. When it comes to at least when it comes to phaser ones,
it's not like a Romulan. It's not that bad.
Yeah,
but it is a little light on the phasers. But the PPG helps a lot. And what is the PPG destroyed on? Hopefully, it's something hard to hit, like flag bridge.
An IPG.
IPG.
Destruction. They're strong on, unfortunately, drone hits.
Ow.
Yeah.
So that ship loses its defense real easy.
Yep. So pray that you don't get, many threes when it comes to internals.
Yeah. Hopefully the IPG is easy to repair. What is the repair cost?
Repair cost is 6 points. Which is not too bad. It's two turns.
Not terrible.
Yeah, not great, but not terrible. It can be brought back to life after it's been killed.
Yes.
So it's usable actually, and has 10 points. It has 40 points of power, 6 APRs, 4 impulse, and 30 warp. And it has center warp.
Okay. And it has center warp. Interesting.
Yes, it has.
Now,
10 center warp.
Yeah. When you convert, when you use the energy to generate ion power, is that per warp engine, or is that for the total for the ship?
Well, the way I read it, let me go back to that page. I should have bookmarked it. Okay, here, just let me had bookmarked this for if we need it later. My understanding of the example, because I don't see it. Yeah, because it doesn't say. It says, any energy that's not ion energy given can be ionized, blah, 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 blah. The cost any given ship pays to ionize energy will be noted on the SSD as a separate line. The energy used to ionize energy can be from any source. And from my understanding, from the example, you paid the cost once, and that will ionize all energy on the ship.
Mm.
So it says by in this case, an example for this DW, by paying this half point of power, the DW can consider any given points of power provided by the warp engines or drawn from the batteries as ionized energy.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, my reading of that is, I was trying to make heads or tails of that section as well, but the impression I got is that you're only able to produce the ionized power at the point it's being used. So either in energy allocation, if you're trying to actually arm either the IPG or one of the ion cannons, or if you have reserve power and say you've got 4 points of power in your battery and you use one of those 4 points for a heavy cruiser to potentially ionize the other three, but then you don't necessarily, you have to use the other three, at that time, because they don't stay ionized, if that makes sense, from what I gather, anyway.
Okay, so you have it at EA, and you have it when you use the reserve power, and, of course, the capacitor can store it as ionized, but that's it. That makes sense. I knew there was another limitation, so it makes it a little trickier. Of course, if you had reserve impulse, then that's ionized by itself, right?
It should be, in my mind, anyway, because impulse energy is ionized energy.
Yeah. Does the IPG require ionized energy?
Yes.
All of it?
Yes. So in other words, you could, fire it twice. Do two pulses in one turn.
And you can fire it on impulse 32 and fire it again on impulse 1.
Yep. You can fire it every impulse.
Wow.
Yep. You just can't, even with Aegis, you can't fire it more than once an impulse.
Right. Now, using it to generate electronic warfare is not allowed in tournaments.
That is correct.
Okay. And I remember having a discussion at one point. I think I sent an email out to Steve saying, well, it might be something that they might want to reconsider.
Understood.
But I don't think I ever got over it. I think Steve said no.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, obviously, okay, I feel pretty confident Petrick didn't get enough playtest responses on the Vudar. But I'm willing to bet that he did not, he said, let's add it, give us more, add a little more, a little difference to the tournament, change it a little bit, and hopefully have some people try it out. And,
mm-hmm.
If it's considered weak, which sounds like you think it's considered weak, that means we can play it and see how weak it is, because if it's playable. It won't obviously, if it's weak, it can still be in the tournament and not affect it. You know, it won't ruin, quote unquote, ruin the tournament, but it will at the very least allow more people to play test it, encourage more people to play test it.
Right. Obviously, it is meant to play with the Alpha Octane ship.
Oh yes.
And I won't have that argument.
Yeah, please, let's not have that argument, because
it's an Alpha Octane ship.
Yeah, and which is the good thing. That it's designed for Alpha Octant, therefore it's designed to fight against them, especially the Klingons, because that was
the people. What's the turn mode of the ship?
I thought it wasn't too bad. Let me look. Turn mode C.
C or G?
C.
And the ion cannons, are they FAL and FAR, or are they all FA?
FAL, FAR, and FX.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Two of them are
forward. That's huge.
Yep, two are forward extended, so that to the right and to the left, you've got two ion cannons.
And what, two are FA and two are FX?
No, two are F. Okay, let me look. Yeah, two are FA and two are FX, yes. Okay, I have to make sure I read that right.
Okay. That's nice.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually pretty nice.
Yeah. As I pointed out last week when you weren't here, that is that definitely gives you a good ability, which is if you have to be running from your opponent, which can happen, I'm thinking about in plasmas, you can still fire.
You can still shoot.
Yeah, you can still shoot at them, you know, out your five and two. Sorry, three. Five and three shields.
Three.
You know?
Yes, you can. Yeah. It almost makes it Fraxian. Almost.
Not quite. Yeah, the Frax or something else. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, at this point, I think, Gary, what did you have to say?
Well, before we bring in Gary, one last thing, and not for this week, but maybe for next week.
Mm-hmm.
Did they redo the Jindarian tournament cruiser?
I have not done that yet, no. The biggest thing for me, the biggest problem with the Jindarians is the freaking arcs for their margs.
I know.
So, the really powerful weapons.
I know.
But the problem is that the arcs are all which way but loose. You know? They would physically have to be changed, in my mind, to be 180-degree weapons. So that you could at least get three of them in arc at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I'm not sure if I feel pretty confident that the weapon normally doesn't allow that kind of swivel. But you never know. They could make an adjustment, right. But I don't think they would. You know, And that's why I would love to try just for freaking giggles and for nothing else, an asteroid version for tournament play. Have those wargs, man, those nasty weapons. But of course, given, and even with those systems, usually they are again, they cover a large swath. They're because they're not designed to be single ships fighting off another single ship. It's mainly designed to be, you know, right. At least in my mind, you know, a fleet of these ships, of the asteroid ships going together. They're colonies. They're not the Jadarians themselves are basically their group, their clan, which they go together. They run around together. You know, you don't have individual, you know, ships in an asteroid field by itself. You know,
right?
Except for in certain cases.
Yeah.
So. Anyhow.
So what did you want, Gary?
Yes. On what, back to back you, Gary.
Well, first of all. Just to follow on the Vudar thing, I kind of wonder if maybe they're more suited to fight the Hydrans than when it comes to the Klingons. Well, quote unquote historically, but it seems that the Hydrans are the ones that they would tangle with more, because those IPGs, I guess they could be used to try to deal with Stingers if they get too close, and then with the ion cannons and stuff, they'd want to try to, you know, keep like fusion armed at least Hydran ships, you know, at something of a distance for as long as they could.
I agree that is a possibility. Here's the only caveat to that. And the biggest issue is, of course, range 2. IPG wave only goes out to range 2. And range 2 is the fighters are trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, actually, at range 2,
they
don't have to do the double,
you
fire
the
double charge.
At range 2. What's that?
At range 2, they don't have to use double charge to fire to actually hit to fire their weapons. Correct?
Well, that's correct. And also, the phaser gats become effective at range 2. And so do the fusion beams.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that you might want to have the fighters stagger in. So one comes into range 2, one's at range 3. Now, you may say, I'm going to hold off on firing my fighters. Well, actually, if you fire the fighter weapons, you fire the fighter weapons, and now it's like, okay, if you didn't fire the IPG, well, you got one fighter off at a decent range. Now the next fighter comes into range. Or you could do it the other way. You can say, oh, I'm going to hold off on the one at range 2. And now you say, okay, next impulse, I have a fighter at range 1 and a fighter at range 2. Now I use the IPG to hit them both. Okay, but one of the fighters got to range 1, which is really deadly.
Right, and the big question there is, from my mind, is would the fighter even really allow itself to get to range 1 at all? Because of, I would think they would want to get range 2 and then run away at that point.
Well, if you've gotten to range 2 and not been fired at,
yes, you're rolling the dice,
then,
man.
It's well worth it. Well worth it to get your fighter into range 1, because it doubles its damage at range 1 from range 2.
Yeah, and
almost.
Mm-hmm. But when it comes to fire, for range 2, okay, what will happen? You'll announce fire, and you then, if you don't fire, you're gonna say, "Well, I decided not to fire." because you can do that. It's totally right. A valid one. But you don't know that he's going to wait. So you most probably, the fighters are going to fire at range two. Because if the fighters, trust me, if your fighters ever get to range two, you're firing, man. Because you're afraid they're gonna go poof in a cloud of dust, whether it's the IPG or just phasers.
You know,
that's why normally they don't get into that range. And they'll be at like range somewhere between 3 and 10, where they have to use the double charge to fire their fusions, and still fire them on the ship and then. Land again on the hydrogen ship and recharge.
Right. But the other thing is that if you want to get to range two with one and then fire it, and then the next impulse, the one hex and tries to run away and the other tries to get to range two.
No.
Unless it can...
Well, the question is, would the hydrogen do that? As a hydrogen player, would you want to do that?
You've gotten to range two. You've unloaded. You want to hit and run away.
Because
you don't want to have two fighters at inside the IPG range at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Or even within phaser range. Because two phaser ones at range two can obliterate a fighter.
Usually.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly they'll cripple it.
Guaranteed.
But it's not a guaranteed kill.
Yeah, guaranteed crippled. Well, not guaranteed, but it's close enough to guarantee it's. Yeah, the only way to not have it crippled is if you roll two sixes.
That cripples it.
No, it doesn't. Seven cripples it, not six.
Does. Yeah, but at range two.
At range two.
Yes. Yeah.
Range one, that's a guaranteed cripple, because minimum four.
Yeah. Right.
And any hydrogen, and if you're a hydrogen player and you want your fighters to get to range, any of your fighters to get to range one, you know it won't come back. It's dead.
Yeah, but at that point, it's done so much damage that.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
That's why, who is it? Sandy Hemingway called them roving nuclear space mines.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that one graphic of two fighters unloading on a D7 at range zero?
Yes. I remember the.
You've seen that graphic?
Yeah, I remember the quote unquote poster that was in the captain's log. Yes. That was a cool one.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm.
Anything else, Gary?
Well, of course, if you want fighters that do actually turn into, exploding ordnance, then you could have a look at the Borac, which brings me to this month's Shapeways launches, because I don't know if you've talked about it. Well,
no, I have not.
In the podcast. But this month's upload includes four Borac ships and also four Paravian ships.
Mm-hmm. I like the Borac, but I tried playing them, and they're just they don't have enough energy. They don't have enough power is the problem.
Yeah, that's Monzo E3, right?
There's an FC preview in, I want to say, Capital Hill 51. I think it's 51. I forget exactly which one, though.
I remember buying the Borac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I liked them. I liked the concept of it. But they, and I actually played there was a tournament cruiser play test, and I tried it. And it just didn't have enough staying power. It didn't have enough damage output to destroy the enemy in one shot, and it didn't have enough power to recharge its weapons and run away at the same time. So it that was the problem.
Mm-hmm. So it basically had it didn't have the power to do a running battle. That's why I remember
No,
you saying
no.
now.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, I could not run. So.
Where is? Hate this. Oh, I know why I'm looking the wrong topic. Da-da, there and there.
Yeah, because if you're on the actual the Shapeways ADB homepage, just click the option to switch to latest, and then it'll show you all of the uploads in order of upload.
Cool. There's the Paravians. I see a Gornek ships. And then the Borak. Me and the fellows were having a little discussion actually about those Gorn ships. The ones with the scales. And some of them do not definitely do not like the scales.
Well, that's one reason why, for certain empires, ADB made a point of offering different types on Shapeways. So, for
Right.
example, if you want to have like a Lyran ship with Aztec-ing, you can. But if you don't want that, then the quote-unquote LDR version of the same ship is smooth-edged, surfaced rather. And similarly for the Feds and Klingons and so forth, whatever. So, it's the only difference is that for some of the X ships, like for example, the Romulans, the Sparrow X, it only looks like the mongoose version of the non-X Sparrow Hawk. So there wouldn't there's not a model based on the older style Sparrow Hawk miniature. So.
Ah, yes, the Borak.
Yeah, both the heavy cruiser and the light slash war cruiser come with turrets, and what they've done is that the because the light cruiser and the war cruiser are the same ship for the most part, just like one's a refit of the other. So that miniature basically comes with both turrets. So you, as the collector or player or whatever, can decide to install whichever turret you want for the version of the ship hull you want.
Oh, okay.
Now there is a difference because in the past there are not past already, but up to this point some of the warp ships have turrets as well, but those turrets have hexagonal slots, so you can basically match them to the 60-degree angles that you'd use them in SFE. But the Borak turrets have circular slots, so in theory, if the Borak were ever added to something like a Call to Arms, where you have 90-degree turns rather than 60-degree turns, then that is more readily usable with the miniature, you see.
Understood, understood. Yeah, I'm just reading the I forgot about the history of the Borak. I'm just reading it. And they're interesting. They're a combination of early years and module C4 at the same time. And that originally they did exist in the early years, but then they were wiped out by the Hydrans. And but the Hydrans continued to use them in their simulators, i.e., they're also a simulated race. So they're a real race,
Okay.
a real empire, and a simulator empire too.
Kind of like the Paladine, because they had real ships until they were conquered by the Lyrans, but then the Lyrans decided to continue developing simulator Paladine ships in the, so that they could use them to train future generations of Lyran command officers.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Yes, I didn't know. I didn't even know about the history of the Paladine because, Okay, someone's E just 777 saying, what is the latest well, in the next SAB module? Did you hear that? Did I hear right that it was releasing more Romulan ships or something? Oh, when's X2 coming out? When it comes to X2, I don't think anyone knows when it's coming out. We all would love to have X2, but
been waiting for that one for 20, 30 years.
Actually, no, you haven't. The reason why I say that is because there was an original X2 module released.
Which I supplement to. I bought it.
Yep. And then they went, then they killed that module and said, just throw it out because it was bad.
Yeah, and, I know.
But again, that was also when Task Force Games was head of the publishing. So that's why that came out. Well, kind of SAB module, geez.
Well, actually, one thing that you might, on a side note, is if you have a look on ADB's Facebook page, you might see that they've posted the cover art for Captain's Log 54.
Yes, I.
But. But when it comes to SAB, I think we might have mentioned it a few weeks ago, but there was talk on the BBS about. They're calling it Module R4T, which will include new Tholian ships. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it'll include some ships from Draco as well, but we don't know that.
Right.
And also Shadow of the Empire, which is basically going to be supposedly what the Romulan ships would have looked like had the Romulans figured out warp by themselves.
Huh. That sounds interesting. So there's going to be a new R module, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't know if they're going to be. I guess we'll have to wait and see what ADB say about them, but I'd be surprised if they were full-size ones. I mean, they could be. Maybe they might not even be as big as Module C3A. I mean, maybe they'll be more like. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But they could be like, half or quarter-sized each. I mean, maybe they'll be like a. Almost like the equivalent of like an FCE pack or something like that. But like, I don't know if I'd see 64 ships, but maybe 16 or 32 or something. But I mean, it's not my call to make, but we'll have to, I guess they'll talk more about them once, Captain's Log 54 is out the door. So we'll have to keep our eyes peeled.
Right. Yeah, I got something I got to send off to. I got all my articles done. Yesterday, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was yesterday. I finally finished sending in all my articles. I was hoping to find it on non Facebook, the Captain's Log cover, because of I'm not logged into Facebook at the moment. Okay.
Yeah, usually like when they have them, they post them onto the BBS topic, but I guess I don't know if they're. We'll do that later or not, but for now, at least, it's on the FB page.
Aegis777 on Twitch is just mentioning how much they realize how much they would prefer not to waste time on more of the same Empire ships. But he says, please put out X2. It's infuriating. I understand that. Issue, Aegis. And the biggest issue is just the amount of work that's going to be required to get X2 in. I'm not even sure if ADB has a clear picture of what X2 is going to look like especially when it comes to the systems. Because obviously, when it comes to X2, it's going to require improvements to many of the systems that are part of the ship, or the different ships. The weapons will have to be modified, if not, obviously, probably made a little more powerful. But the question is, will they still function exactly the same way? My guess is no. Like the photons, they might be now single turn army weapons. It might still require warp, but they might work a little differently. for all I know, they might decide that, okay, the photons are now going to have a seeking weapon mode, which is the only reason I even bring that idea up at all is if you've ever seen some of the Star Trek movies where you see the photons going off, the nice twinkly star from the Enterprise and going off and actually going and hit the other ship, after a bit of time. So heck, it could be like a flivver, where they're 64, they move speed 64, so they're very fast,
right.
or take one or two impulses to reach the ship, can possibly do that for long distance firing of photons so that you can actually get more damage instead of using proximity photons.
I imagine that would be way too risking the ire of Paramount to try to go anywhere near the after 1979 material. So that's not necessarily something I would expect. I mean, last thing you want is for ATV to get burned, hewing too far away from the lines that has been laid out for them.
Oh, well, just Gary, honestly, I don't think that Paramount would care that much on that point. I think Paramount is more concerned about the look of the ships. That is their main focus. If it looks like their IP, they'll nail you. But I don't think how the weapons work, they're as nearly as much concerned about that. They're more concerned of the eyeballs, and what it's perceived to look like.
Well, that's because the lawyers don't play the game.
Yeah, so that's why I feel like I'm not as terribly concerned about that doing something like that and having a possible issue with Paramount, because it might still be kind of a seeking weapon kind of thing, so it's still a little different than the photons you see in Star Trek. So,
if we're in the wish list ticking off box section of the podcast, then I guess I'd think that it would be interesting to steal some of the ways that the weapons work in Federation Commander and use them as alternate firing options for their X2 variants. So,
right.
For example, an X2 version of an ESG could have a burst mode that coincidentally works the same way as the ESGs work in FedCom.
Yeah. Oh,
and then that means that when X2 goes to FedCom, it'll work the same way by default.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree on definitely on that point when it comes to the ESGs. I totally agree when it comes to X2 and the ESGs and having them so they have a burst mode like that. I think that'd be great. Obviously, the other weapons, plasma and so forth, that would be interesting to see how that would change. Because as I say, I think you can't just ramp up the damage, because I think that's what ADB is trying to get away from that whole concept of it's just more powerful because of the whole issue that happened the first time they shipped out a module X2. They're going, no, we're not going to make that same mistake again. And Aegis, when it comes, Aegis 777 was mentioning how, saying, oh, well, why don't you just focus on the Zerkalians and not worry about the IP infringement? Which I don't think with X2 though is concerned about the IP infringement at all, really. But I do agree that I would love to see the Zerkalians myself. The big question, obviously, there is going to be how much would the Zerkalians sell? At this day and age, I'm not sure it would be a bad thing in my mind, because of how far, how old the gaming system is. We've been sitting around for how many years now with the same old ships? And I think everyone can agree here that There is no more room in the Alpha Quadrant for additional ships. It's nuts. The number of variants and specialized ships and so forth that are available. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the point of adding more to the Alpha other than, you know, people like the Alpha ships? You know? You know, improving on the Omegas, I know that me and Gary would love it. I think Barry would probably be interested in it too. You know, playing with with new Omega ships. But, you know, the question, you know, how will it sell? And, of course, when it comes to FNE, you know, that's going to be a big one for, you know, the Andromeda Wars, which is a war, which would be interesting. That's good to hear. I'm sure, Gary, you know about this, which is Aegis was remarking how BattleTech is seeing a resurgence. Too bad they can't accomplish the same thing with a new product launch for SFB. I'm not sure how BattleTech is doing. Gary, can you give me some insight to that? Because I know you're more familiar with BattleTech and that gaming system.
Well, just under 20 years ago, WizKids basically started launching MechWarrior Dark Age. That was the clicky type game that was set in like the 3130s.
And they had the clicky 20 years ago?
Like, you actually had like the wheel on the bottom of the mech and you turned it as you played the game or whatever.
Oh, I know what exactly you're talking about, but because I remember when those came out, the Dark Age, because I was still playing BattleTech back then. But I didn't know about the clicky things. Continue. I'm sorry.
So the IP for BattleTech has been kind of like, you know, all over the place. Like, video games is held by Microsoft, and people have to sub-license from them to produce things like the current BattleTech game and things like MechWarrior 5 and so forth. But basically, the people who were running, like the organization that was basically selling the clicky games, was separated from the organization that was basically running the quote-unquote classic BattleTech.
Right.
And for a long time, MechWarrior Dark Age was ongoing, it basically prevented a classic BattleTech from moving past the year 3067. So it took a while after the clicky game went away for, maybe slightly before then, but classic BattleTech basically started moving into beyond 3067 up until about, say, 3085 and stuff. So in that time, it basically showed like the stuff that happened in the Inner Sphere that led to the creation of the Republic that you see in Dark Age. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, when Catalyst Game Labs became the current content producer for BattleTech, their first opportunity to create something new that hadn't already been preempted by the MechWarrior Dark Age stuff was called the Wars of Reaving, which basically showed what happened in the clan homeworlds at the same time that the Inner Sphere was falling apart. And it was really, well, if you're a clan fan, it was really harrowing. it really made a stamp on things, and it also shook up the Deep Periphery as well, like the Scorpions, like moving to new pastures, and some of the original clans, some of the older clans being destroyed or merged or whatever. And then finally, because basically Catalyst decided that, just like the same way that if you look at the Starfleet universe, you've got early years products like Module Y2 and so forth, and then you've got middle/general war year stuff like Module R12,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got the X modules like Module X1R, and then hopefully in the future we'll soon have Module X2. So similarly in BattleTech, what they've done is that they basically created six, although we're on the verge of a seventh, eras, and they've done like dedicated source books for those eras. So for example, there's really detailed books looking at the Star League Civil War and like the Amaris Crisis. Actually, they had to do two books for it because the Liberation of Terra was too big to handle in one volume. And there's also books that basically show like the formation of the clans and also show the first and second succession wars and so forth. So you get to see firsthand like how it all went to pot. But now the Catalyst have actually, they've been able to move the timeline past the point that was done by WizKids in MechWarrior Dark Age. So they recently did products which basically went up as far as 3145, and now they've moved the needle as far as the very end of 3150. There's a product called Shattered Fortress, which shows kind of like what seems to be the dying era of the Republic, but then there seems to be something up their sleeve. I mean, no one's entirely sure what their final great card to play will be. So now actually what's happening is that after a bit of a delay, I mean, somewhat similar to the kind of delay that we've been expecting dealing with Module X2, is the Battletech folks have been working towards a product called Illclanned. And based on the cover art that they've shown, it's going to involve a fight on terror between the Republic and a clan. And if the clans win, they basically become the rulers of a new star. Well, in their own minds, they become the rulers of a new Star League. And in support of this, they've basically been ramping up production of a bunch of novellas and recognition guides and various things to kind of show some of the storylines that are leading up to this big titanic end of the Dark Age and beginning of the new Illclan era.
Mm-hmm.
So, just 1 second. There had been a hint that they were actually going to wrap up the Dark Age and then skip 100 years to the future into the year 3250.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a backlash at the time because it seemed like it was too much of a leap forward.
Right.
Almost like the way X2 would be a leap relative to even X1.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that we're slow-boating our way to 3250 because there have been a couple of the most recent products where they basically kind of like, if you've ever read a Battletech source book, it's usually written from an in-universe perspective. And that basically means that it's basically limited in a sense by the person who's writing it because they don't have any magic knowledge. They only know what their intelligence agencies have provided them, whatever.
Right. But
then you usually have like a GM section in the back that helps you, the player, understand what's really going on if they want to tell you.
Right.
But what they've actually been doing is that, now this might be a bit of a spoiler for anyone who's wants to wait and see what happens. So if you're that wed into Battletech, then just cover your ears for the next few minutes. But
cover your ears.
That's all I have to.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to
go to bed.
Call it a night. So.
Okay.
Yep. Bye bye.
See you, Barry. Oh, well, yeah. I've got. Okay.
What?
No. I was going to talk to Gary, not you, Barry.
Okay.
You have a good night. Okay. Gary, just one quick thing.
Yeah.
You just 77. Was just pointing out a couple things. One, Catalyst Games, which you're talking about, Labs is producing now for Jordan Wiseman, he believes. The original game is being reprinted and debuted at Origins last year. Is that correct?
There was a Kickstarter to basically produce box sets with new miniatures, basically kind of like a way to get new players to be able to actually play classic Battletech. And actually,
stop.
There was also a Kickstarter for the Clan Invasion, so basically the classic 3050 max, like right. the Timberwolf and so forth, they'd be available like in a box set based on the Kickstarter, and those would be a way to kind of introduce players who've maybe never tried Battletech before into the system, and also to the new, because Catalyst have also created a fast playing modification called Alpha Strike, which is the mechs don't have full-on record sheets. They just have like one row of dots for armor and one row of dots for for the mm-hmm. innards.
Yes.
And the game basically is designed to play like, you know, like an inner sphere company or like a clan trinary. I keep mixing up the clan terminologies. They use various like types of celestial bodies.
Right, it's abstracted. The battle mechs are abstracted out. Understood.
Yeah, so it's almost like playing Call to Arms relative to playing FFB.
Right. Or FedCom.
Yeah. There is that. But it's almost like there isn't necessarily a similar box set that's been produced for Dark Age. But they have been going out of their way to release various books that allow you to use those same miniatures in the Dark Age. So players don't necessarily feel that they have to buy an entirely new range of miniatures to use in the Dark Age. So, but I see it would be cool if I think it'd be interesting if the Battletech could actually go the Shapeways route the way that ADB has, because, like, you think about the thousands of ships that have become available through Shapeways. I mean, that would actually be an interesting way forward for BattleTech, I think. But anyway.
Yep.
I think the big thing to answer your thing.
Just one last thing, which was just want to make sure that I understand the whole BattleTech thing just a little bit. I think that since we're going down this dark road. And that was that Wiseman, basically currently, he got back the rights from FASA. The old FASA rights back is what he says.
Well, there had been an ongoing legal issue with Harmony Gold regarding the quote-unquote unseen. Because, certain mechs, like the clan mechs, like the Timberwolf, were actually invented by old FASA, and they're safe to use for BattleTech.
Right.
But some of the older original miniatures had basically used designs that were used from various Japanese
animations. That seems kind of obvious. if you know any Japanese animation, you see them.
Yeah. So what Catalyst have basically done in more recent times is two things. One is they'd either do, like, say, for example, if you think of certain mechanical objects that have three modes, they call them LAMs in BattleTech. They actually went and created Star League prototype versions of those LAMs that don't look anything like the ones from those old cartoons. So those basically are safe, you know. But then more recently, what they've done is they've created versions of the unseen mechs that still function in terms of the weapon suite that they're supposed to have in BattleTech,
right,
but have enough distance from the unseen to avoid legal issues. And also, they, in a sense, they're basically, I guess what Catalyst are saying at this point is that these are the original mechs, you know, kind of doing the whole Jedi mind trick in terms of thinking, no, these are the mechs you're looking for. But that's a handy thing the further forward you go in the timeline, because, like, many of the mechs in Dark Age, some of them were in the Clicky game and have since been reproduced in metal form by Iron Man Metals, but some of them have actually been invented specifically for Catalyst, like for their own projects moving forward.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this correctly. Currently, BattleTech is still using the old molds, you know, made out of, you know, was it tin or something like that, a combination, you know, so it's melted metal that's formed into these miniatures, correct?
Well, the new Kickstarter ones, they basically would use sprues that would be, like, you know, new molds. But also individual mechs can be purchased in metal from Iron Wind Metals. So they, as I say, they haven't gone the Shapeways route in the sense that you order a 3D printed mech.
Right, but that's the point I'm trying to get to, which is basically they're not plastic, they're metal. Even if they're formed plastic, because, you know, back in the day you could do that too. You know, of course, you do that for, like, Risk and things like that, where you just have these metal pieces, these plastic pieces, you know.
Oh, well, as I say, the ones in the Kickstarter will be plastic, but the ones that you get from Iron Wind are metal.
Okay. So, well, the ones that are being generally sold, are those plastic? This formed plastic?
Well, yeah, basically, the main thing is that, because if you're ordering from Iron Wind, they would have a lot more variation. Like, say, for example, if you've got, like, a Clan Omni-Mech, which has different configurations, then you can try to, you know, see if they have the specific configuration you want. Whereas the ones that come in the new box sets, they pretty much are what they are. So.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Just one quick question, and then we're gonna for tonight. And that is, remind me, because I know you've told me this before, which is, what is the faster than light technology that BattleTech uses?
All right. Okay. So, actually, I never got to that spoiler, did I? Because I was trying to say, spoiler again. There are basically hints that, like some of these, like read like clips that basically assume that some of the books that we're actually reading have actually been printed in 3250, and that the Elk Clan has been a thing for 100 years. They basically are running a large portion of the Inner Sphere, and that there's like whatever the new era is going to look like is going to be radically different from anything in the past. But so on spoiler. There's two things to bear in mind with Battletech. One is your jump ships, they have a safe range of about 30 light years on average. And then the hyperpulse generators, they're like they'll send signals from one star system to another. They have a range of about 50 light years. Mm-hmm. But with the jumps, there are some ships that have these special batteries that allow them to double jump, but usually it takes about a week or two to charge the drive up to the point where it can jump safely again. With the hyperpulse generators, you can daisy chain. In theory, if you pay enough money to do it, you could have a signal basically broadcast from one end of the Inner Sphere to the other. But the whole thing with the Dark Age is that about 4/5 of the network has collapsed, and either due to sabotage or to something weird happening in the fabric of hyperspace, whatever. And it's basically caused a major crisis across the Inner Sphere.
Okay,
and
but
no one's entirely sure how to fix it. So
okay, so but the jumps are instantaneous. They're not like in Star Wars where basically you're flying in hyperspace, and it may take you a while to get to from point A to point B. You're just traveling a heck of a lot faster than you would in normal space.
Yeah, the jumps are instantaneous. That's right.
Okay.
Once you've actually done the jump, it takes a while for your dropships to carry you to the planet that you want to get to.
Right, because you're basically where those points are is basically above or below the star of that solar system, correct?
The safe ones, like the regular, the Zenith and Nadir jump points. But there are these things called pirate points, which you have to be very careful to calculate. But if you pull it off, you can basically show up in orbit of the target planet and really get a quote-unquote jump on the enemy. But usually you only do that if you're really done your homework. Mm-hmm. So it's it doesn't always turn out well.
Cool.
But speaking of jumps, part of the thing with Dark Age is that the core of the Republic has been protected by this thing called Fortress Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been hints in recent books of how it works, but basically there's like a core area. There's been a core area around Terra.
Yeah,
where the jumps don't work, and the ships that try to jump come back like half scrambled or whatever. So, but in the more recent books, they've been kind of like, hinting that it's not going to last forever. So it's basically just like a holding action to basically delay the inevitable. So,
right. Well, it's not,
we'll see what that is.
Well, it's not to me though. It sounds like a defensive system that was activated, in the core system to prevent, when everything went haywire, they activated it so people could no longer jump into the system, jump into the core, But anyhow, that's my explanation. Just one quick question, and then we got to go, which is Aegis 777 was just making sure that he was understanding that you're saying that Cadigus Games Labs game is modified. I don't think you're really saying that. You're saying that the pictures that are used for representing the mechs have changed when it comes to some of the original mechs that were based off of...
They're producing a new range of...
Well, no, I'm talking about the original mechs that were part of the original Battletech that were originally based off of like Japanese anime.
Well, what they've done is, because for a few decades, those mechs, like if you looked at the record sheet, they would just be like a blank silhouette instead of actually seeing the design for that miniature.
Right.
So the redesigns that they've been doing in recent years have been intended basically to succeed those in a IP safe manner. So I guess it would be like you think ADB is quite fortunate. Like, if we think about how, like, you know, ADB has its collection of ships from the technical manual and certain ones from the pre-1979 franchise, but then it has all its own original ships.
Right.
So imagine what would happen if Paramount turned around and said, you can have your original ships, but you can't have the classics. And then you'd have to basically design an entirely new ship that worked the same as a Federation CA in terms of the SSD, but that didn't look like the CA. That's the kind of headache that the Battletech folks have been having, and that this new range of designs have been intended to address.
Understood. It's a bit of a...
But of course, I would refer to the folks at the Catalyst Game Next, because I don't work for them. And
oh, understood. Understood.
You know, a fan from a distance, so right, don't take my word as...
as gospel. Understood.
Too much. Yeah.
Yeah, what you're describing, Gary, sounds like what ADB currently has an issue with going ongoing, period, which is creating new ships that are reminiscent of Paramount, but they don't ever look like the new ships from Paramount. You know, it might be similar, but not so much so that they're going to get tinged by Paramount. No.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's more that, you know, especially when you look at things like the Shapeways version of the Federation CX, I'd argue that it's based on the way the technology works in the SFU. It basically shows a way that you can turn the base ship into a new generation of ship, but going in a totally different direction from what the motion picture did with the refit.
Right.
So I think that's a good way of putting it. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, I guess the thing is that things like Shapeways have done a lot to basically help articulate this in a better fashion.
Oh, I agree. I think that for the Battletech guys, I think that probably is a better way of going themselves, but you know, to each his own. If they're able to make it work financially that way, go for it. You know. But anyhow, it's really late, and I really got to get going because I have to get some sleep. It's past 11 o'clock here in the Eastern time zone where I live. So anyhow, Gary, it's been lovely talking to you. You have a good night.
Same to you. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye. Yep. So had a nice little discussion there about the Vudar for quite a bit of time. I actually even got to talk about the Borak and some of the Shapeways miniatures. You know, obviously I didn't focus too much on that because I know sometimes that can get quite boring. But, you know, I let you see some of the new Borak miniatures. Because of the Borak's actually kind of interesting, and as I said, that I thought that is kind of an interesting thing, where they're both a real empire, quote unquote real, and a simulator empire at the same time. And of course, I never did not know about the Peladon, because I remember, if I recall correctly, the version of the Peladon created by Ursini, I think it's Lisa Ursini. Those ships were created by her, and then ADB said, you know, basically brought them in and said, okay, well, we'll use those, and she agreed to do it that way, and didn't actually do something stupid like Companion Games did with basing things off of SFB. And of course, we had a little discussion there about Battletech, which went a little longer than I really had expected, but that's fine. You know, I wanted to know a little more about Battletech when it comes to, you know, SFB and how those two old game systems, because both of them are really that old. Actually, SFB is older than Battletech. I know that for a fact because I remember when Battletech came out. SFB had already been out for years by the time I got, before Battletech even showed up at all. Was it in the middle of, I can't remember whether it was in the middle of college or it was after I graduated from college when Battletech was released. I think it was in college when Battletech was released, which means sometime between 84 and 89. So it's still very old. Anyhow, and with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.